We're talking about saving the world's languages in this hour, and we're partnering with a radio show in another language. Israel Story is one of the most popular radio shows in Israel, now going into its second season. Some people call it the Israeli This American Life. Here, Israel Story journalist Dana Harman takes us to the epicenter of the rebirth of a dying language, a Yiddish library in Tel Aviv, in a rather unlikely location.
Past the vendors hawking cheap knapsacks, phone cards, bed sheets, plastic plants, and greasy falafels, up the ramp beyond the STD clinic and a kindergarten for African migrants' kids is a dark corridor with an open door. Welcome to Tel Aviv's massive and much maligned central bus station, the Tachana HaMerkazit HaChadasha. It's where hapless commuters shuffle along with foreign workers, refugee seekers, drug addicts, prostitutes, and homeless. And into this mix, add one Belgian-born Orthodox yeshiva boy turned Bohemian Israeli, a Yiddish performer and book collector. That's him, Mendy Kahan, who's speaking here in Yiddish. He's a 48-year-old bachelor with bushy eyebrows, sparkly blue eyes, and a receding mane of gray hair, who today is sitting at a desk amongst a clutter of papers and unpaid bills, chain-smoking rolled cigarettes. He looks for his lighter, and then he looks for his mobile phone, and then, thinking of an even better plan, he starts looking for his glasses so he can actually look for his mobile and his lighter. He then gets up and puts on an old tin kettle for mint tea, swaying ever so slightly back and forth as he chats, a leftover, perhaps, from his early Antwerp yeshiva days. Though you wouldn't know it from looking at him, Mendy's kind of a rock star in the Yiddish world.
I was born in Belgium. I grew up in Antwerp, which is like really like a cosmopolitan Jewish city. I grew up with Yiddish, with French, Dutch, and of course also Hebrew. You know, like at school we learned the Mishnah, the Talmud in Hebrew. Like it was a traditional religious society, but open-minded at the same time. Like we also went to the synagogue and we also saw movies. At home, I had books of Sartre and Camus of my mother, and we also had a good Jewish library with the Talmud, the Mishnah, the Marshur, the all kinds of exegesis.
In 1980, right after high school, he came to study at a yeshiva in Israel, but soon began straying from his Orthodox path, enrolling in secular courses at Jerusalem's Hebrew University.
From quite early on, I felt that I wanted to get out of the religious world, which felt to me like the small shtetl. Everyone knew each other. I wanted to be in the universal world. Israel was for me an encounter with freedom, with sunshine, with open skies. I went to Hebrew University.
On a whim, he decided to tack on a Yiddish literature class to his course load, just really for old time's sake. And that's when he realized something in Israel was amiss.
It was really, like, we were in the department, we were three or four students, like, really a small department. And the feeling was that it's dying, and here we are studying at the university to keep the memory going. But actually, it's a dying thing. And this feeling that it's dying, and that it has gone from the world, and that it has not really much to say anymore, this was really disturbing. I lifted my eyes from the book, and I said to myself, Here we are in Israel, in our home country, finally. And where is all this? Like, where, how come there's no even a memory of it? And I understood that these are my roots and I have to do something with it. And so I said to myself, I'm young, I have ambition, I want to do something creative. And so let's take this Yiddish thing and let's take it a step further. Let's take it into life. Then I started to collect Yiddish books.
Mendy started collecting in 1996, putting out word that he would take care of any Yiddish book dropped off at his place in Jerusalem. He soon was overwhelmed by calls and then visits, typically from younger Israelis who couldn't speak Yiddish. They, following the death of an older relative, didn't know what to do with the books left behind. Many of these youngsters, Mendy told me, felt it would be pretty disrespectful to toss out their grandparents' or their parents' libraries. But they also didn't really want them there on their new IKEA shelves. Now they had a much better option. Guilt-free, they could schlep them all over to Mendy's and leave them on the doorstep. The piles in his living room grew and grew and grew.
I didn't know what I was going into. Like, I thought I will collect a few hundreds, thousands of books. I would have a nice library, and I will have a good reading material.
Before World War II, there were some 15 million people in Eastern Europe who spoke and read Yiddish, a mix of German, Hebrew, and Aramaic written in Hebrew characters. That world was lost and destroyed in the Holocaust. But there's been something of a mini revival of interest in Yiddish language and literature. Here in Israel, there are about 500 high school students sitting for the Yiddish matriculation exams. There are more universities and colleges offering Yiddish literature as part of their courses. But still, outside of ultra-Orthodox circles, in Israel, Yiddish basically is a dead language. It never stood a chance, really. In pre-state Palestine, and then later in newborn Israel, Yiddish was seen by many as a competition to Hebrew, the ancient biblical language which had been revived by Eliezer ben Yehuda. And so Yiddish was not only neglected, it was actually derided. When we spoke to Avshalom Kor, Israel's go-to authority on the Hebrew language, he explained that the attitude was...
When you talk Yiddish, you are attached to the diaspora. Eliezer ben Yehuda, for instance, he was ready to talk to everybody in every language in the world. He knew many languages, but never Yiddish, because Yiddish is a concept that you do not belong to the land of Israel. You do not belong to the language of the Bible. Yehudi!
That's the anthem of the Hebrew Language Brigade, a group completely devoted to safeguarding Hebrew from foreign intruders, like Yiddish. Speak Hebrew, Jew, go the lyrics, because that's the language of your land and people.
There is a story about the riots of the years 36 until 39, riots against Jews in the Promised Land.
These riots are known today as the Arab Revolt. The Arab Revolt was a nationalist uprising by Palestinian Arabs against the British Mandate and the mass Jewish immigration.
A Jewish bus on its way. Arabs started shooting. One of the Jewish passengers shouted, Yorim aleinu, kulam nishkav. They're shooting at us. Everybody lying down. One of his friends stood up and said, Do shistmen, uneret ebreish. It was Yiddish. Here they are shooting. And he talks Hebrew. At the middle of the riots, in the Jewish bus, there was the battle between Hebrew and Yiddish.
And indeed, in the 1930s and 40s, in an era that celebrated the figure of the Tzabar, the strong, virile, tanned Israeli toiling away on the fields of the kibbutz, Yiddish was losing that battle big time. Yiddish movies were boycotted, kiosks selling Yiddish papers were attacked, and local Yiddish musicians were banned from performing. All those Yiddish books saved from Eastern Europe and lovingly brought to the new land of the Jews lay yellowing on dusty shelves. In a country that was trying to forget the Holocaust, they represented something weak, even shameful.
I remember this woman, when I met her, she was like beyond the 80s, and she told me how she came here to Israel, and with this whole feeling of wanting to give. She came from Vilna after the destruction and wanting to educate the children. And she says, and here I arrived, and the first thing that she saw is that she started to talk to the children in Yiddish, and they immediately, they were 3-4 years old, and they were putting their hands on their ears so they shouldn't hear, like they had this already inborn reaction to Yiddish. And this hurt her so much. She said, how did I know to close the ears? Like little children, innocent little children, how did I know this? And this pain, when she told me, was as if it was fresh and alive. And she told me, like, my husband, when he died, he told me, it cannot be that they will continue seeing Yiddish like this. They at some point it will change. And here, you have arrived to take the books. And so I felt like a calling.
Soon, Mendy's little Jerusalem apartment was overflowing with donated books. And so he decided to make it all official and call it a library, Jung Yiddish.
Jung Yiddish, Jung means young in Yiddish. So it's to relate to the young energy, to the rejuvenating energy of Yiddish. Like if you have Ying and Yang, so you also should have Jung. At the beginning, it was really like hush-hush. People told it to each other from word of mouth. People came from Bnei Barak, cantors, yeshiva students, or people who like literature, who know to sing.
The center was thriving, but Mendy was a bit of Spielkes, as they say. And with the sunny beaches of the Mediterranean calling, he decided to get on route number one and head 45 minutes west to the big city of Tel Aviv. He set up shop temporarily in the basement of an office building, but when that space was taken over by a kindergarten a few years later, he found himself, together with, 20,000 books and counting, evicted and out on the street.
Yeah, when you're a refugee, you know, with books or with pekelech, you don't have much time to think. Every day is like survival, like Jewish survivors, not like the survival of television, you know.
Desperate, he followed a tip from friends of friends, which led him to the Behemoth bus station. There, as luck would have it, in something of an attempt to revive the reviled space, the city had begun offering cheap rents to encourage artists to move in.
So I saw this place. It was like a deserted parking lot with birds flying around and no windows and nothing, no electricity. I had like 7 tons of Yiddish books that I needed to find a house for. And so I said, that's it. That's the place.
He fixed the windows, he swept the floor, brought in some secondhand Persian rugs, and moved in with his hoard of Yiddish treasure. If you go to Mendy's Kingdom today, there are like 40,000 books there. It's amazing. Periodicals and magazines fill the cavernous space behind the office. They're lined up on shelves, they're propped up on the walls, they're piled high all over the ground. Health magazines from Warsaw circa 1924, joke books out of the 1930s Vilnius, and beautifully illustrated children's books from New York in the 1940s. There are novels by Shlomele Ettinger and Chaim Grada, poems by Manny Leib, there are plays by Yud Lamed Peretz, and translations of everything from Pushkin to Hemingway to Cervantes, all in Yiddish. Stop by. You won't be alone. On any given day, besides Mendy and the occasional volunteer cataloging books or organizing a temporary exhibition, you're as likely as not to find, maybe a few bearded chassids in the corner who've popped in for a schmooze, or a handful of Russian immigrants reading Der Tunkeler or looking up something in an Avram Raisin poem. There are occasional curious tourists who wander in, or shy students who don't know a shlemiel from a shlemazel but who will show up with a letter from a grandparent they've found and need translated. And then there are the young hipsters, lounging around, having a smoke with Mendy.
Yiddish has become like really a fringe culture. It does not have a home, it does not have a nation, it does not have an establishment. So many groups who also feel that they are not part of the establishment, they're at the fringes of society, they connect with Yiddish. So be it lesbians or homosexuals or people who don't feel at home with this Hebrew militarism, they find Yiddish a more peaceful and a more lenient culture to connect to.
Several times a month, Yiddish fans of all sorts gather here for themed evenings, everything from sing-alongs to cabarets to Holocaust memorials to herring and kugel tastings. Mendy will typically get up on stage at some point, often with a visiting artist in tow. And with the always appreciative crowd swaying and humming along, he will begin to croon. This evening, he's invited his keyboard player, a small lady in her 70s, to center stage. She takes the microphone, flashes a sort of flirtatious smile, pushes back her gray hair, strikes a pose, and channels Edith Piaf. In Yiddish, of course. Zweyugnfu mit liebechem Gefangen mir mein liebe Dusche Und ich will sorgen ohne Busche Ho The crowd, to use a Yiddish word my mom taught me, quells. At the end of the evening, we sit around near the oversized cushions depicting the greats of Yiddish literature, Mendel and Mocher Tzvoirim, Shalom Aleichem and Yud Lamed Peretz, and we talk. Mendy pours out the mashke, the vodka, for a bissel l'chaim, he says, and rolls himself another cigarette. The buses rumble overhead, shaking the entire room, and a muffled announcement in Hebrew informs us that the 394 will soon be leaving for the city of Eilat. And then it's quiet for a moment, allowing my thoughts to wander. Those great Yiddish writers and thinkers who so yearned and dreamed the land of Israel, what would they make of this central bus station library? I ask Mendy, how would they feel about this place provided to them in their promised homeland?
Well, I don't know if they will dance from joy, because on the one hand, like, they come from, there were millions of readers around them, and here these books are a little bit left aside, a little bit hurt. But there's so many intelligent, bright things and so much work in this book, so much thoughts. If I would have some money, I would make panels so that you can see the writers, their biographies, and then you could see the richness of all this. But for the moment, this is the best we could do, so that's it. But I believe it will grow. It will. Bakroit mit Rosenkranz Ich hab im Lieb.
Journalist Dana Harman of Israel Story brought us that piece. You'll hear more of our collaborations with them in coming months. Israel Story will launch an English language show in early September. You can find out more on our website at ttbook.org.